In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Welcome back, guys. As I was saying, we've been talking about Holdo so much that we completely skipped over Luke Skywalker.
True. I've heard of him.
No shit. I mean, Rey going to Octo and
Kazandite.
Jeez, man. Rey going to Octo and
Kazandite.
Rey going to the island where Luke is and wanting to get trained under him and learn the ways of the Jedi.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back.
Jeez.
Yeah, I get it. Okay. Let's get to it. So first things first, the lightsaber throwing moment. Completely diffusing everything that the first movie apparently built up to. I did like the metaphor, kind of a slap in the face, like, screw you, JJ.
Right?
I don't really care where, or maybe screw you, the audience, you know, subverting the expectations as usual.
But it's also establishing this big part of the story of why he doesn't want to train her and what transpired and why he's on that island for such a long time and sort of cut off from the world and like stuff like that. So I feel like scenes like that give it more context as opposed to those scenes being taken out and just it just being that Kylo Ren, Luke Skywalker showdown and the Jedi Temple burning and stuff like that. It would just feel shallow otherwise. So I like the hesitance in not training her and stuff like that.
You know, I did like him sort of not being a big fan of the Jedi anymore. The only shout out to the prequels talking about how the Jedi Order failed, got Darth Sidious into power. And the Jedi really haven't done much in the six movies of the saga so far. They are flawed.
They are flawed, I agree. And Luke actually attests to that when the whole scene with Yoda's Force Ghost happens and him wanting to burn down the Jedi Temple and stuff like that. So,
which brings us to Yoda, by the way.
Oh my God, I was so happy to see Yoda. Especially the old Yoda.
Puppet Yoda.
And oh my God, dude.
And Frank Oz voiced him,
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It's insane, dude. And just the whole, you see the Yoda characteristics from the original series, like just the quirkiness and like the sense of humor and like just... Yeah, it was so good, man. Reminiscent.
But also, Force Ghosts have like crazy Thor-like powers, apparently.
Yoda's Force Ghost has.
But we're jumping ahead. Mm-hmm. So what happens in the middle is that Rey begs him to train her. I thought that whole sequence was kind of lame just because we knew where it was going. Also, Arctu had the caretakers, the porgs, the plush toys that we will all be sleeping on for the next 10 years because it's Disney. They have our money. The porgs didn't even play a role. At least the Ewoks played a role. You know, this was just like pure and simple merchandising. At least BB-8 was cute and he played a role.
No, Box played a role. They gave Chewie a conscience.
Yeah. The pork chicken he was
so
making.
So important. He was about to eat them and he didn't. Oh my God.
Do you think they taste like chicken?
They look like chicken for sure.
Like chicken mixed with penguins, basically.
I don't know, man. There's something else there which I can't put my finger on, but
they were
know.
So cute, but it was like I could see through the fourth wall and I knew like why Disney was doing it and it just took away a little bit from them and they've given it a role. Just at the end of the movie, they have Crystal Foxes too, which I assume will also sell some toys and make them do something instead of just being there, you know?
I actually think it's going to be the Pogs and the evil BB-8. The BB-9E.
Yeah.
Those are the two toys.
Darth BB-8.
Darth BB-8. And those are the toys they're going to sell, man. But we're digressing. So talking about the whole training, and they eventually do start the training, the Jedi training and stuff.
No. I have one more very important digress from Octo. Bless me. Which is Luke Skywalker sucking on the teat of...
Sucking on the teat.
It's just the green milk and then just bathing in the green milk like it's an ad for it. Dude, it was like, it's messed up. It scarred me for life. It's like, imagine watching the original series. I wasn't a kid, but like probably many people were who watched it and this Luke Skywalker hero and now he's this hermit and he's doing this green milk teat sucking weird animal. Why was that there?
Wait. So are you saying there was nothing in the original trilogy which was equally or not more Skyrim?
Luke Skywalker drank, or at least from a cutscene, normal blue milk in a glass, and now they just took it to the next level.
But what about that whole scene of hand cutting open that camel animal thing so that they could survive the night on the slope?
You're planet. Embarrassing yourself. It's a tauntaun.
A tauntaun. And do you think that wasn't equally or more scarring for a kid watching that at that point of time?
You know, the tauntaun guts were always translucent, and I thought that was always kind of cool. This was not cool. This was just weird and gross.
Look, man, again, stupid point. Star Wars isn't made for kids. It's made for people like us as well, and people elder
George
to us.
George Lucas would have disagreed with you.
Yeah, it's made for people elder to us for sure as well.
Oh,
yeah,
and I'm sure the Pogs are made for the real geriatrics.
No, there are things that are specifically geared towards the younger audience. And Luke's been on that island for so long. He's having to survive on his own or with the help of the caretakers. And if he wants to milk someone, just milk, bro. Like, do whatever you want.
It's
make some cheese out of that for all I care.
Ben Stiller and Meet the Parents. I mean, anything can be milked. You can milk me.
Yeah, that was gross.
All right, I'll let you get to the meat of it, which is Rey's training and a sequence I will concede the Skype connection between...
Skype connection.
Between Rey and...
Because there's internet all over the place.
Yeah, Snoke has internet, man. Kylo Rey.
Yeah.
The FaceTime between... Force time between Kylo Rey.
I like that one, actually. Yeah.
Apple Force time.
Yeah, you're right. That's where the first Force time call happens, and that's where it gets established. It's pretty cool, and... I like how they've shown it. Like, it doesn't seem forced, if I can use that term here.
Oh, what a joke.
It doesn't seem forced at all. It seems natural. The transition in and out of the Force times. I love how I'm calling it Force times already. And the transitions in and out of the Force times are actually pretty cool. And
the sound mixing when they do it is really cool, right? Like, everything else drowns out.
Yeah.
And then they actually establish that Kylo can only see her, I guess, because, you know, to not leave the audience confused.
Yeah, like he that's the first question he asks. He says, can you see where I am? Because I can't.
Yeah, but it's just the two. It's very much like, you know, it's just the two of them.
Yeah.
So that was all on the island from the very first one till the point where they like actually touch hands and stuff. I like what they were doing. That was a pretty cool sequence because it does highlight how these two guys are not only at the center of the series, as I guess like the light, dark side, balance, whatever, but also they're like the best actors, best characters, definitely, and really the only ones I find myself caring about at the end of the day. So it brought that to light.
I don't know. I feel like Leia's character is actually pretty well drawn out, and Luke in this movie overall was
pretty... Yeah, but you know she's not surviving, so that makes it hard.
It does. I mean, apparently there are rumors that there's enough footage of Leia or Carrie Fisher that can be used in the 9th movie as well. But
No, they said she's not in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible, man. But her character in this particular movie was pretty well drawn out. I think they focus a lot on outside characters like Poe and like Finn, and Luke, of course, was there as a mainstay as well. So what I also like about the Force times is... I can't get over it. What I like about the Force times is how much context it provides to the storyline as well. Just their interaction. And I think it happens thrice, if I'm not mistaken. Their interaction all three times provides a lot of insight into their characters and a lot of their life as well, right? So For instance,
Rey is not used to seeing shirtless men. Interesting.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
And her confrontation of why, because she grew to love Han by the end of the first movie, of why he killed her and his explanation for all of that. And that's where she actually finds out that Luke had something to do with Kylo Ren and he tried to murder him. That's what Kylo Ren says. And that leads to the confrontation between Luke and Rey.
Yeah. So they show that Rashomon style, right? Like three times, basically. One
in a
Luke.
Star Wars movie, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Flashbacks not too common in a Star Wars movie.
I know, and the way they show it, I mean, again, I've been harping about this entire show, but Rian Johnson killed it. It was so refreshing to see that take as a director into a Star Wars movie. And again, coming back to it, he tried to do so many things differently, but everything he did held its ground. And
One of the things he did so differently from Empire was the whole dark side hole / Dagobah cave was so not original, though. It's like,
also, this is the scene where the interval came in.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Oh my god.
Brutal.
Dude, do you remember how pissed we were? It's just like, it gave me so much time to actually think about the pacing of the movie till then, because I was getting bored, and this scene in particular really bored me. On top of that, add the strategic for your pleasure intermission that they claim to sell more popcorn. Oh my god, I could have killed someone.
Dude, Indian halls, get your shit together, man. Seriously, I mean, Dunkirk ruined, The Last Jedi close to being ruined. It just makes no sense, man.
I know. They need to do something, but I don't have any hope anytime soon. Anyway, when we came back, we saw more of this scene, which was so painful. I think let's just get to the point where we find out the truth about what happened with Luke Skywalker.
And Kylo Ren, yep.
Oh my God. It was so, so annoying.
I think it was an awesome explanation.
Dude, they screwed up Luke's character like nobody's business. The guy who, at the end of Return of the Jedi, decides to go to his father, the worst man in the galaxy at the point, because he sees a hint of good in him and has hope, thinks about murdering his nephew because he sees a hint of bad in him or the dark side in him.
No. You're skimming over the details, which is not doing it justice. I feel like that scene was very well played out. The third flashback where it's properly explained of what actually happened. I love how they played with emotions in that particular scene because Luke senses the sheer force, the sheer power, the dark side in Kylo Ren, and he knows what he's destined to become. Both of these movies and everything that's been built up about Kylo Ren and Rey, also for that matter, is that they're more powerful than Vader, than Luke, than whoever else has come before them. So the amount of darkness that Luke sensed in him, for a fleeting second, he wanted to kill him, and that's when he wanted to just like strike him down with a lightsaber. And that happens to be the moment where Kylo Ren turns around. And imagine it from Kylo Ren's perspective. He's obviously being pulled with this whole darkness and light and all of this and Snoke and Luke Skywalker and teachings and yada, yada, yada. And he sees his master, his own uncle, just have a lightsaber on top of him. And obviously he turns. It's so brilliantly shown. I actually loved that third flashback and the explanation for it.
You would love that third flashback. It just made no sense. I mean, if Kylo had been shown to be like some crazy dark side guy, that would make sense. So far, he's basically like a teenage version of Darth Vader, like a emo Ren teenage version. And it didn't make any sense. And I mean, it's so ruins like Luke's legacy and all that, which I guess this movie does in general. This explains, by the way, you remember Mark Hamill talking about how he disagreed with what Rian Johnson did to Luke's character?
But was eventually convinced.
Yeah, because that's how actors work. They're just empty cups that you pour coffee into and make them act. That's the job. That's what he's supposed to do for millions of dollars.
Honestly, never been a big fan of Mark Hamill
Except as a Joker.
He's an excellent voice actor. He's got the voice for it, but he doesn't have the, you know, everything else.
The acting. Yeah. I don't know, man. You know what a good force ghost might be to talk to in situations like this? His father. His father who appeared at the end of Return of the Jedi. Maybe he could tap into that and be like, hey, by the way, I see a lot of dark energies in your grandson. Any thoughts?
What do you think Force Ghosts are? It's like a bell. He's like, we don't know. And then like Anakin shows up, ting ting, and then Obi-Wan shows up. What do you think is happening there, man? Like,
the point is we don't know.
They show up at times where they feel that their direction is needed the most. That's why Yoda comes only at that time when he's about to burn it down and burns it down for him. So it's not like, oh, he's like, hey, Anakin, can you just like, I need to like talk to you. That's not how it works.
There's not a helpline. It's not a force helpline.
No.
He can't force time.
No, you can't force time. And
He can't force hangout.
No. Being a Star Wars. No, stop.
Force Skype.
No.
I don't know any other VIP.
That's it. I think you ran them out. I have a few in mind, but I don't want to throw them in there. I feel like being a big Star Wars fan, your views about certain things are very skewed. And you should get them in order, man.
Yeah. I'll get them in the first order if you want. Okay, so Rey leaves. She's like, you're no help at all. Just like,
not really, but she feels that there's again the same situation where Luke goes to Vader. She feels like there's some hope.
Yeah. The same. Yeah. It rhymes.
Two things happen which are along the same lines. All right.
So let's get to a sequence and a plot that we seem to have conveniently not spent time with.
Mm-hmm.
The planet Monaco, also known as Canto Bite, where they shoehorn this war message and, you know, the sort of Star Warsian prequel era thing of kids making things race, which again give me a hint of the prequels, which again I'm appreciating a little more. What was going on with that storyline? Everything was a psych, firstly. Justin Theroux made a cameo, and he was supposed to be the master codebreaker. Actually, just the whole master codebreaker, that whole thing that Mask Kanata set up, it's like a video game mission, isn't it? It's like, oh, before you can actually board the Imperial ship, you must go find the master codebreaker. Take so-and-so chips and so-and-so coins, and then you must bring me back this item to trade, and so that you might climb, blah, 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 blah. It was so bad.
Video games have you been playing, man?
I don't know. Clearly, 2 minutes Pokemon in like the 80s, I guess. But dude, was that not the worst, at least, plot of the movie?
That was the worst and 7-8 minutes of the movie.
It's like 30 minutes.
It's intertwined between different scenes, so you feel like it's a 30-minute stretch. But in actuality, that town is shown for like 7 to 8 minutes. Think about it.
That casino scene is horrendous. They try to say this is the upscale version of the Mos Eisley Cantina. And instead it was just like, oh, look, like it's like Earth except people wearing like stupid clothes. And they made all these cameos, you know, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in that scene and some other people. It doesn't really matter. Justin Theroux, like, who apparently tuxes are a thing now in the Star Wars universe. I hated it so much. And then when they ride the goat horses, how prequely was that, dude? Like, couldn't you just imagine Finn and Rose on a green screen, like Daenerys-style green screen dragon-shaped green screen goat thing, and then spending 5 days just shooting this stupid-ass sequence?
Yeah, I can. It's probably what happened.
Yeah, just so prequely. I mean that in a bad way in this instance.
Yeah, I feel like anything prequely compared to this movie is going to be in a bad way. I didn't care too much for that part of the movie. And
what about the fact that they stumbled into Del Toro, what was his name,
Benicio Del Toro?
No, I mean in the movie,
DJ Stutter. Benicio was definitely the weakest link in this movie. Coming back to that casino scene, I feel like it's an homage to Star Wars as well, because if you think about it, every Star Wars has that one crazy scene where it's like they like try to like shoehorn a Star Wars universe sort of a thing into the movie.
Yeah, but unlike other movies, in this case the resistance is dying, just about to be eviscerated, while Finn is like, oh, that creature, and then Rose has to drag him away. That little tidbit, it pissed me off so much. And then they stumble onto Del Toro, who apparently is the same master code breaker, and then I've already walked you through how it results in basically the end of the resistance. It made me so sad because that took me out of the movie so much. And the other aspects of the movie that were going on right now at that time were so exciting. Like, you want to know, because the other side, it was
exciting.
Snoke. Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because Snoke had been built up for a movie, aka 2 years. What happened to Snoke, Vikram?
I'll get to it. And I want to talk about Benicio Del Toro before I get to it a little bit. He was, as I said, definitely the weakest link in the movie. And I mean, it was sort of shaky the way that character was established, but he definitely has a part to play in episode 9 as well, because obviously he's Benicio Del Toro. He doesn't come in for five minutes in a movie. So coming back to Snoke, okay?
His character did say one good thing, which was they blow you up today, you blow them up tomorrow, right at the end after he betrays them.
Yeah.
Another meta shout out to the audience / Star Wars in general, which is just like the sequence of the saga.
Right. But also the ship they hijack, it's the dude apparently sells weapons to the First Order as well as the Resistance. Yeah, so
that was probably the only decent message in the whole sequence. Whatever. And to summarize, it was the Rathkar sequence of the whole film.
Sure. I can't defend
either
Monaco or Benicio Del Toro in this situation. It was definitely the weaker part of the movie and pulled away from how magnificent this movie was. Coming to Snoke.
Snoke. Supreme Leader Snoke.
Supreme Leader Snoke, man.
Let me concede first thing first.
Surely go for it.
Andy Serkis.
Legend.
Legend.
# legend. Oh my God, dude.
He was just... it's sad because from now I will expect him to be amazing every time. Because I watched War of the Planet of the Apes recently. I mean, anything he's in,
Jesus,
doing
Tintin. Do you remember him from Tintin?
Yeah, but that was so long ago. Dude, he's just taken it to the next level. He's taken his art form to the next level. He's a true artist. He's the only reason Snoke was at least arresting to watch when he was on screen. But there's nothing to him, it turns out. Smoke and mirrors, red herrings. Maybe that's why. And the sound stage that they were shooting on, his throne room callback, was awful.
I loved it.
You loved that it was red?
I loved everything. Everything he was wearing.
You and I can recreate it right now.
No, we cannot.
Okay, obviously. We cannot. But it was so clearly a soundstage. Like, you remember the Emperor's throne room looked like it's the actual, like, head of the ship that they're on. This was clearly a soundstage.
Just because it did not resemble the Emperor's throne room doesn't mean that... Again, people like you holding society back.
Jesus.
Embrace change. Please. Open your eyes.
What was Snoke's character? What was Snoke's background?
So I'll tell you. Obviously, it's not explained, right? It's very little that you know about Snoke. And I feel like the media and the fans built up Snoke way more than he was. He was in a total of 2 to 3 scenes in The Force Awakens, if you remember correctly.
I have to interrupt you there. You know, people say the media and folks built up Rey's parents. They built up Snoke. No, J.J. Abrams / Star Wars, The Force Awakens / Lucasfilm / Kathleen Kennedy / the entire empire that is feeding us these movies made us build it up. They dangled this in front of us. And they even dangled it in the trailer. So you know it's important. Like the parents, they even dangled in the middle of the movie.
I'm not talking about the parents. I'm only talking about Snoke right now.
That's part of it, dude. The two biggest theorizing elements were Rey's parents and Snoke. They did this and they just whisked it away, which is so sad. They did it so much.
I don't agree with that. I actually feel that there's more to Rey's parents, which I've already spoken about. And as to Snoke, Andy Serkis killed it, obviously. And the way they showed him and... Oh my God, his throne room, the entire ship, supremacy and everything in there and his guards. It was so sick. And there's so much more to Snoke that hasn't been said but has been hinted at that I feel like there's still something there about Snoke which is going to come back.
In the 9th movie?
Maybe.
Oh, so you're just justifying that it sucked in this movie and claiming that two years later...
Firstly, I didn't say it sucked in this movie. I thought it was
great. You're justifying it sucking in this movie because it sucked that they took it away. It's just a bait and switch.
No, it didn't suck in this movie. I actually loved Snoke's portrayal in this movie and the way they showed him.
I like the portrayal. Just the fact that you set this villain up and then just use him for, I guess, Kylo ascending to the dark side. And this is the way he did it too, because he just called out something that... annoyed me a little bit. Maybe you have to be too much of a film fan or know a little bit about like the script writing element. But at one point, he actually looks at Rey and says, "Now for you, all is lost," which is like the script writing, like all is lost moment for the protagonist. I found that like really lame because it kind of took me out because it was very clear they're calling out like a element of the movie. But anyway, he's super powerful. You want to know more about him. And then, boom, his story is cut in half, if I may say so myself. Why would they do that?
That scene was a little surprising and out of the blue. So it took everyone aback. 100%, that was a chain reaction throughout the audience. But I still feel there's something left to Snoke and Rey's parents as well, which were, according to you, the two big questions established in The Force Awakens. But that being said, forget about that for a second. But the sequence that follows after... when Kylo Ren and Rey kick some serious ass was so good. So good.
There were great moments in that sequence. The end of that sequence, for instance, lightsaber through the face.
Oh, dude.
Very good. Anyway, the sequence was cool. I didn't like the setting because it's the whole red throne. It just felt like a soundstage. Anyway, it's not the action that makes something cool, right? Like, it's not the special effects that make something cool. What was underlying it is, like, you didn't know what was happening next. They suddenly teamed up, which, of course, was a great part. And then you didn't know whether Kylo Ren was on the light side or not. And that was the most interesting part to me. So, which made what happened next interesting, which is, turns out that he's not, and he's clearly now going to be the main baddie, supreme leader, Kylo Ren.
He does what... emperors or supreme leaders, dark side type do. They kill their masters.
Well, Sith, yeah. Which I guess Snoke was not.
They're not the Sith, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's established. That's said in his description as well. If you read up, he's not the Sith.
His description says, I'm not a Sith.
I'm not a Sith. Because he's narrating his description to the world. Hi, I'm Snoke. I'm not the Sith. Just BTW. No, okay. Man. I really like that sequence, that fight sequence in itself.
Fight sequence of the movie does not make, but the emotional...
Fight sequence is a scene in a movie. And yeah. A good scene in a movie, a bunch of good scenes in a movie make a good movie. And this was one of the better scenes in the movie.
My point is, my favorite lightsaber duel in the Star Wars saga is the Return of the Jedi, and that's because of the emotions underlying it, right? And the music, which is epic. But, you know, when Luke finally lets go of the dark side and takes on his father. So in that sense, I like what was going on here because there was that potential for emotion. And in fact, I will also concede that kind of got unlocked. You know, a film is a visual medium. So the visual imagery of both of them fighting for Luke's lightsaber with the Force was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's like sort of the culmination of that fight scene. I like that a lot because, again, the emotional and, you know, potential character heft that underlay.
Again, cool scene make cool movies.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, and also to your point about waiting to find out what Kylo Ren is going to do, that's established like immediately after that when he says that he's going to do that. And that pulling of Luke Skywalker using the Force in the explosion post, that establishes an exit for Rey to get to Crate.
Then BB-8 rescues them in the AT-ST from random stormtroopers that survived.
Beast,
more like murdering sociopath.
Dude.
But I guess R2 has been... Hey, we didn't talk about R2. Little R2 appearance. Luke turns into old Luke when R2's there. That's nice.
Yeah.
BB-8, on the other hand, murdering psychopath in an AT-ST. And like, I kind of hated it. Firstly, you knew it's going to be BB-8. Every Star Wars movie, and this movie like five times, whichever character has disappeared, again, big trope, whichever character's not on screen, you know as soon as the main characters are in trouble, that character will rescue them. So lame. So I knew it was going to be BB-8. I was hoping it wasn't going to be BB-8 because I was like, please, that doesn't make any sense.
Who do you think it would be?
I mean, I was hoping it'd be something interesting as opposed to the
BB-8,
trope.
BB-8 taking wires out and like circuitry magic, yeah, and like killing stuff. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, total psychopath, by the way.
No emotion. It's a robot.
Cutest psychopath ever. Yeah. So he rescues them and then they reach Crate directly. They disappear. The Millennium Falcon is involved or no?
No, Millennium Falcon is where Rey and Chewbacca escape.
Oh, so Rey escapes from the ship. Yeah. And then, Hux almost tries to kill Kylo.
Yeah, and then Kylo moves and then he just puts his blaster back in. That was epic.
Hux is just a punchline at this point, man. What happened to his big speech from The Force Awakens?
Dude, I mean, sorry to disappoint you, man. I loved it, though. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. And also, Donnhall Gleeson is this the most miscast guy. So, I mean, I guess they've just given up on the character.
I don't know, Hux is the actor who's portraying Hux, kind of growing on me.
He's a great actor, but...
As Hux, I'm talking about that actor as Hux, kind of growing on me because...
Especially if you think about the relationship Tarkin and Vader had, as opposed to what Hux and Kylo have. That's such a waste, because now he's just a punching bag, like I said.
No, but then that's not fair to compare, obviously, because it's not what they're trying to do.
I just mean it was a better relationship.
Of course, it was because the general's character in the original trilogy was shown as such a powerful guy.
In like three scenes, whereas Hux has had so much time.
Also the actor, come on.
Also the actor, rest in peace. So many people, rest in peace.
I know, but Hux is not aimed, they're not even trying to do that. So I don't know why you keep bringing up the original trilogy here, but you don't even need to.
Because it's the Star Wars original trilogy, and we're talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, it's a new movie, it's a different movie, and they've tried to do so many things differently, which I really like. Again, I keep talking about it, but I can't get over it.
Okay, they then go to Crate, which to me is like, I won't bring up the original trilogy, but I mean, I guess I just did. Hoth, come on. And they like, the beauty of Hoth was they had AT-ATs, and that was mind-blowing at the time. You know, it represented the Empire having access to these crazy weapons. Here, they just get 80. I mean, the AT-ATs are, like, just staring. It doesn't even make sense for, like, 20 of them to be standing in line at one door. Whatever. I did like the
Are you suggesting what the military strategy should be?
Never mind that. The white sand, red sand, the white salt, red sand.
Yeah.
Very cool visuals. Actually, the visuals on Crate were the best in the film for me.
I agree, man. And no, not the visuals in Crate, but everything about that last sequence in the movie and how the resistance fighters are lining up in the pits and then the old guy gets up and stands. And like the entire time that was happening when he's seeing through the binoculars who's coming, and then they establish the whole red sand part there. The entire time I was thinking, is this someone important? Is this someone I should know? But then later realized that scene was only to establish the red sand part of it.
Yeah.
So cool. Because that plays out so well when Luke comes in.
Before Luke returns, Rey returns, because of course that's how these things work. She drives the TIE fighters away.
Dude, you're just hating for like no reason right now. Just fucking tone down, dude.
It's if you want to change something, like go less for the tropes, but that's fine.
feel then, like this word you learned before the thing is just like, I'm going to say this 20 times. 20 trope bombs I'm going to drop in this show.
I feel like it's the word Rian Johnson learned. And then he's like, I'm going to do this 20 times in the movie. This is so cool.
Yeah, Ray comes back, saves a bunch of people, directs the attention away from the
ski fighters.
Ski fighters.
I don't know the name.
I think it's called a ski fighter.
Shut up. No, it's not.
I actually think it's called a ski fighter.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding.
Might have nailed it.
You're a true fan. Not. And everything up until, oh my God, I'm just going to skip everything and then just talk about the inevitable. Luke walks in and I don't know. I don't know about you, but that's the first thing I caught.
Let me pause you there. I didn't realize it for a long time. And
the beard and the hair?
Yeah.
That's the first thing I caught. Because in my mind, the flashback scenes between him and Kylo Ren were so clear because they happened thrice in the movie and stuff. And him on Arcto, obviously longer hair, grayer beard and stuff like that. I immediately caught it, but I didn't think too much of it. And if you think about it, he goes to Leia and then he hands the golden dice to her.
Yeah, the golden dice.
I also thought that was forced. But after the movie ended, that has such a significant
But it has no significance to the saga. I think it's going to connect to the solo movie.
I'll tell you why. So as soon as he handed her the golden dice, that's when Leia realized that Luke's not there.
Really?
Yes. Because she knows Han's dead, right? It's not like, oh my God, Han's dead.
Firstly, I think he should have been on Crait, but let's just move forward with what happened. So... the part where he dusts off the AT-AT blasts.
Can we go a little slow here? Because I want to like absorb everything. So he like walks out super slow. He's like walking out. This is where the scene of the old man standing and the red sand thing comes into play, where apparently he's not leaving.
No, I caught that when it was happening. This actually happens later. I'll get to it when we get to it.
And then he walks out and then all these guys are like, oh, he's going to like kill them all. And then Poe is the only one who sort of realizes what he's trying to do.
How much did you want him to just like start running and chopping off AT-AT legs? So that would have been so cool.
Dude, that was one scene where I was just like, zero expectations. I mean, obviously tremendous expectations, but zero assumptions of how it's going to play out. And just like literally edge of my seat, just like a slight smile on my face.
And then Kylo goes, I had a smile on my face too, because it was Luke was back. And then Kylo goes, so I had to notice the haircut, okay?
Uh-huh.
Like, I guess in retrospect, like, I don't know, maybe subconsciously I was like, oh, the caretakers gave him a little haircut and dye job before he left. And then Kylo just goes like, every weapon, every blaster.
Again, one more thing that establishes Kylo's immaturity or vulnerability, and also his madness towards decimating Luke. I mean, that one single emotion that Luke flashed in that flashback, right, led to so much hatred within Kylo that... he was literally prepared to just fire everything, and he did. And as soon as Luke came out of that thing, I'll be honest, I was slightly disappointed. Because that's when I was like, oh, dude, they're overdoing it. They're going to push it over the edge. Oh, my God.
In terms of what? His power?
Just like the whole use of the Force and like what they can do. I mean, I've read a few novelizations and stuff about Luke Skywalker and some ridiculous things he's done. This is between 6 and 7, obviously. And he does some really, really wicked stuff, right? And uses the Force. And that's why I come back to it and say he's the most skilled Jedi ever. And I was like, dude, that's pushing it. And then you just go with it, obviously, because you're in the heat of it. And then Kylo Ren comes down.
I don't know what to think of that moment, but I did enjoy this. I don't know why. I wish it had been for a better reason. Like, instead of... because he's taunting Kylo from like 2 miles away, which makes no sense. Because I guess Force and supervision.
Yeah,
it makes you everything. It gives you anything you need, basically. Force Ex Machina, we've been through this.
Jesus, stop, man.
But I did. It was just like a cheer moment when he does it. There's no doubt.
And then Ren's like, I, whatever. He comes down and then they're facing off. And I was like...
So they're facing off. Really cool visuals. They kept doing these wide shots, right? Even with Rey on the island, they did these insane wide shots where the person is just a speck. In this one, they did a wide shot on Crait, red sand here and there. They kept doing wide shots for the trail that the ski fighters were making.
Right.
I know what you're talking about. Rebel Twin Sons.
Twin Sons, dude.
The best episode. The best animated piece of... lightsaber duel magic ever, basically.
I know, right? And just to give everyone some context here, it's basically Obi-Wan Kenobi fighting Darth Maul, who's obviously who died at the end of episode one, but then he got resurrected in the show in the Clone Wars.
Actually, he got cut in half, just like Snoke, and survived.
Wow.
Interesting.
Okay, sure.
And, backing your own theory.
Yeah, but okay. Nah, not going back to that again. He gets resurrected in the Clone Wars. Palpatine takes him under his wing and like just discards him in the middle of that. And then he comes into Rebels and becomes the main villain for Rebels. And eventually ends up on Tatooine because he feels Obi-Wan's presence there. And Obi-Wan finds out. And then he comes close to figuring out that Obi-Wan's there protecting someone. And that someone is obviously Luke Skywalker. And that's when Obi-Wan just pulls out his lightsaber. And it's a 5-second duel.
It's like Akira Kurosawa, Samurai.
Oh my God, so
Samurai cool. Duel. Like, it's all in the build-up and the execution. One stroke.
Darth Maul is done. So that's my favorite lightsaber duel out of all Star Wars thing. But
why would you even bring that up?
Because
this movie didn't even have a lightsaber duel.
Kylo Ren and Luke Skywalker's lightsaber duel, I'm saying, is now my favorite lightsaber duel in all of Star Wars.
What? Firstly, it's not even a duel.
It is. It's longer
than... He's doing Neo-style Matrix dodges, Luke.
It's longer than the Rebels duel, first.
You remember the Neo dodge, right? You
know what I'm talking about. I did, and I actually found that really cool, dude.
No!
I nerded out, man.
It was like cheap 3D.
I loved it, and I loved everything, and then his feet not leaving the whole...
I did notice that when it was happening because they make it a point. Basically, Luke's line of vision goes to Kylo's feet, which is leaving the red trail from the salt. And then afterwards, because Luke's line of vision had done that, I made it a point to look at Luke's feet and his wasn't. And at the time, I actually just thought it was how badass, like, ninja in the Force Luke was.
Like he was floating?
Yeah. No, I just thought he's so light-footed.
Oh, right,
he's so zen and one with the Force that he's not leaving any trail. And I felt like Luke almost smirked in the knowledge that he was doing that. So I thought the director was pointing that out just to show how badass Luke is and how in control Luke is.
Do you think if you would have paid notice and figured out the whole haircut beard thing and then coupled that with the footprints, do you think you would have... I felt like it was just happening so quickly that your mind wouldn't...
It was the climax of the whole movie. And also, like, I can't dream up the fact that force projections are a thing and such with, like, shiny lightsabers and all. It made no sense.
Dude, and then when the whole dialogue between Ren and Skywalker is happening, and then he's like, if you strike me down, very akin to Obi-Wan's to Darth Vader.
Yeah,
shout homage. Out from, yeah, and then if you strike me down, I'll forever be with you or stronger and stuff like that. And he does, and he's running, and then that's when you know that that's actually when I was expecting Luke to... do the whole Force Ghost thing just like Obi-Wan did. And
which
didn't.
Is effectively what he did. That's what I don't understand. What was the point?
I'll tell you the point. Because Ren attempts it. And that was very important. Ren attempts it. And then Ren sees. And then obviously the cut to Arcto. And like, dude, meditation goals.
Gesundheit.
Meditation goals right there, man. Oh my God, dude. When you see Luke just like in it, sweating, hovering up the stone. Oh my God.
And what? Meditation goal is to expend all your energy meditating and then just die?
Meditation goal is I'm sitting at home and my force projection is in a meeting, which I don't want to be in. That's meditation goals. But
he gets affected anyway. The end result is the same.
No, it's not. It's not. That's what I felt as well immediately after he turns himself into a force ghost. But that's not it, if you think about it, okay? Firstly, Ren does not get the satisfaction of killing Luke Skywalker, which, according to everything you see about the dark side, pushes someone further towards the dark side, right?
Interesting.
That doesn't happen. He doesn't let that happen. B, it gives...
Compelling, I grant you that.
B, it gives the resistance more time to escape. Because Ren's just battling with what the hell's happening right now and he's just wasting more and more time. That's when...
Maybe if Luke was actually there, he could have made a dent. He could have made a damage. He could have given them even more time.
If Luke was actually there, all the 80s firing at him would have killed him.
Okay, maybe Luke could have actually been there, projected himself like 15 feet away from where he was.
Again, you're just going back to it.
Right? I'm using a power that at least I'm using within the rules of what was suddenly established. If he had that power... And you know what sucked? They showed the X-Wing in the water... Even if they didn't show it on screen, it would have been perfect to imagine, oh, Luke raised the X-Wing, just like Yoda effectively taught him to.
You're just trying...
It would have been perfect.
You're trying to make this into the original trilogy, but you're still hating on the fact that it's trying to do it
but
itself.
But why did they show the X-Wing?
To show that that's how he came to Arcto. There's nothing wrong with that.
We didn't need to know that. It's the fact that it was the X-Wing and it's in the water. It was just calling out. I think, if anything, I would believe that they show the X-Wing just to make people like me think that he's going to lift it and come back and subvert expectations like all this movie. This movie is one big psych, basically. Should we call
I love it. I
Star
love
Star Wars The Last Psych.
I love every time that happens. And it just...
You're a kid, basically. You're like a unsophisticated movie
watcher.
Yeah,
hate on me with your immature jabs, but it exactly is what it is. It makes you want to think of something, and then it takes you to a different direction.
An immature jab might have hurt Kylo if Luke had actually been there and made one with his lightsaber.
Luke fulfills or pushes Kylo Ren towards his so-called destiny of being the true dark leader that he is. And Luke obviously didn't want that. It's just he made Kylo Ren attempt that swipe at Luke. And it just goes to show that maybe in the ninth movie there's something to it, what akin to Vader and Obi-Wan, and then Vader in the sixth movie as well.
Listen, the fact that Kylo doesn't kill him and hence doesn't go towards the dark side and all that, that is compelling, but that is something you are ascribing. The movie doesn't point to that at all. That is again theorizing.
I mean, I like it that it doesn't. I like what that's been the thing about Star Wars since the get-go. It doesn't obvious say what the obvious thing is. And I mean, I'm not even talking about the prequels right now, but the original saga and these two movies as well, they always allude to something. They always have potential theories cropping up here and there by fans, and some of them come true and most of them don't. And that's what I love about Star Wars, and this was one of those things. If Luke would have actually been there and he would have obviously died, then it would have solved no purpose.
Not obviously died. He could have done what Obi-Wan did exactly. Like when they have times when it makes sense to actually do.
He would have been dead by
do.
Then if you think about it. The AT-ATs would have killed him.
He could have projected 15 feet away. Like maybe they wouldn't have killed him. Maybe he had powers that would have allowed him to escape, or maybe he would have taunted him earlier. I mean, you can't say for sure he would have died, especially if he had this power to begin with. Anyway, like... his ascension, it just seemed sort of pointless to me. Like, at the end of the movie, it would have made sense if he'd been alive. And honestly, maybe if Carrie Fisher wasn't the one who was going to carry the next movie, they would have kept Mark Hamill alive. And I guess he'll be back as a Force Ghost, right? That's the whole
point. He has to be back as a Force Ghost. And you've seen how powerful Force Ghosts are and the importance.
No, we haven't. Importance, yes. Power, no.
Yoda?
Until Yoda. Yeah, again, recently established. Lightning.
You see how important they are. You see how powerful they are. You see their importance in giving direction to the new Jedi, which is going to be Rey. So you know he's coming back. And I don't think this was something that was haphazardly put together because of the Carrie Fisher situation. It was there in the script always. And it was shown brilliantly. I loved it.
I just think the legend
The twin sons. He's staring at the twin sons, man.
That was nice.
Jesus,
that was nice.
Dude. I mean, you're not even a fan anymore. It's like you just hate
him
in the movie.
I said it was nice. And also, it was a pleasant surprise that the island had twin sons. And... yeah, the journey begins and ends with twin sons. I like it. I'm a fan, you know, so anything that connect like that and round out like that, I'm going to like. But if you just think to what the saga becomes, because the first three movies are the saga of Luke Skywalker. And man, it's kind of brutal what happens to these three people, Han, Luke and Leia, after the original trilogy. And when you take the saga as like a 4-movie in the case of Han and a 5-movie saga... it's kind of sad. It is really sad,
but that's
and it's
that's
not good. It doesn't have like a nice ending. It's just, it's like Disney's taken it over, and because they need to turn it over to the new actors, they don't think of it as a saga anymore. It just makes me sad.
They touch upon emotions that are not touched upon in Star Wars generally. I mean, every trilogy that's come has ended in a nice way. Obviously, not the third one, but the original trilogy ended in a nice way, and like this trilogy is gearing towards maybe ending towards in a nice way. But I really like the fact that they deal with these older characters in the way they have dealt with them. It's very refreshing, to be honest. It's not
it's
like rosy, like happy ending, like hold hands and like walk into the sunset sort of an ending.
Yeah, because that's what it was. That's what the ending was, and we loved it for it. And it just so happens that the mechanics of the way the movies need to work. For instance, Han doesn't want to be in any more movies as in Harrison Ford, so he's the first to get killed off.
You think Harrison Ford's like, I don't want to be more than one movie, and J.J. Abrams like, yeah, I'll kill you off?
You know, he didn't want to be in like the third movie. That's why they froze him. You don't know that? That's why they froze him.
Because that was a salary dispute.
Han didn't have a great ending or a great middle.
But
his story is he went back.
Han's ending impacts the story so much. Kylo Ren kills him, and it has everything is building towards Kylo Ren and Rey at the end of the day. And I don't understand the point that you're trying to make here, because he kills him off, and if there was a different storyline that would have affected Kylo Ren differently, then Han Solo would have been in this movie as well. And there's a reason he's become a Force Ghost. Luke Skywalker has become a Force Ghost because he's going to have an impact in the ninth movie as a Force Ghost trying to shape Rey's destiny, for example.
You're just putting a lot of eggs in the ninth movie's basket. A lot of people put a lot of eggs in this movie's basket for all the open threads that they unfortunately
because
abandoned.
Of the disappointment that The Force Awakens was.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough, and fair enough. I feel like it's handled a lot of that really, really well.
I don't know, dude. You could judge Empire by itself, you know? And you could judge... You couldn't judge Attack of the Clones by itself.
No, say it. The second movie of the trilogy is so good.
As soon as a prequel is a benchmark, you know you're screwed. So let's not even go there. But
you're making it a benchmark. I don't even want to bring it up in this discussion.
That's how I feel after watching this
movie.
Are you
comparing this to Attack of the Clones?
Of course I'm not. Hey, which brings me to an interesting point as we round things out. Let's rank the movies. Where does this rank for you?
I know you're going to hate me for this, but I really like the direction after seeing Rogue One and, well, not The Force Awakens, but after seeing Rogue One and this movie, I'm actually happy.
Don't say something stupid. I'll go on for 20 minutes.
Hear me out. I feel like the direction the new Star Wars saga is taking and Disney and all of that, I'm actually pretty happy with it. I was very unhappy with it after The Force Awakens. I was supremely disappointed, as was everyone else. But after seeing Rogue One in this movie, I'm actually pretty pleased. So my top... How many movies have been there? 9?
Yeah. And the holiday special.
Not counted.
It's counted. It's in the ballpark of this. Not kidding. But
so the bottom one is obviously Attack of the Clones. Then it's Revenge of the Sith for me. I'm going bottom up, by the way. Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, Force Awakens, Phantom Menace, A New Hope.
I feel like some people might need to defend that, but we were the perfect age for Phantom Menace.
Dude, I mean, again, it's not for kids only.
Anyway.
We were pretty young when it came out, yeah. So where was I? Phantom Menace, A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Rogue One, this movie, and Empire Strikes Back.
What did you just say? Did you just rank Rogue One above?
I really, really liked Rogue One.
What?
I don't know, man. It just after The Force Awakens, and then you were like, dude, this whole Star Wars thing is in turmoil and this and that, and then just Rogue One comes out and it killed it.
My lord, that was crazy.
It killed it.
I think I'll go top down.
Uh-huh.
Return's number one for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've always liked the culmination more than like the middle part. Because we had the ability to see it all together. So
you like Mark Hamill screaming?
Maybe. He screamed at the end of Empire.
Oh, right. You're right. Yeah.
He became Chewy all of a sudden.
No.
It's Return, then Empire. It's actually pretty easy. 6-5-4.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6-5-4-3. I like Revenge of the Sith because, you know, we were the right age. We saw it together, if mm-hmm. you remember. And yeah, lightsabers, duel, fun. Then Rogue One, then Phantom, then this movie, then TFA, then
Attack of the Clones.
Then the holiday special.
I knew that was coming, man.
At least I ranked the holiday special last and not in the vicinity of this movie.
I see your point about Revenge of the Sith here, but Hayden Christensen, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I thought they couldn't trump Mark Hamill as a casting, and then they come up with, like, oh, let's just, like, make someone worse his dad.
I thought Hux is terrible casting in this one. I didn't really care much for Rose. And, I mean, I'm so pro this, and it's so cool, but the diversity angle just starts screaming out. If you think about it, it's like... Finn, the black guy, Rose, the Asian girl, Rey, the girl.
So racist.
What do you mean racist? I'm just saying, like, the car, it just was screaming out to me a little bit.
Because there was a black guy and an Asian girl.
No. Rose in particular being Asian, because it's so new for a Star Wars character.
Embrace change, brother. Just embrace change.
Yeah, we've already called me the reason for Trump once already. So.
And a racist now.
Jesus, all right, calm down.
Get over it, dude. 21st century, like 2017.
I call it out. I meant for the most part, it's a good thing. I didn't like Rose's casting and I didn't like her character. And those are probably the weakest acting ones in this one. I mean, thankfully, Daisy Ridley learned how to act. In The Force Awakens, she wasn't acting well. It's like her first movie, basically. And J.J. Abrams wasn't directing well. Like, what were those editing choices? She was smiling when someone told her about Luke Skywalker. I don't know if you've seen these videos.
I don't want to talk about that movie.
Fair. I think we've done our part. I mean, we've been talking about this movie for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. My ending point of this movie is... obviously, just to summarize everything I've said, is I love Rian Johnson's take on the Star Wars universe. I love how it just departs from the traditional Star Wars path, and what he ends up making and what he churns out holds its ground very, very strongly. So I'm pretty pleased with it, and so excited about everything else to come out from the Star Wars table, the Han Solo spin-offs and the ninth movie. Keep them coming, man. Make a 10th, 11th, 12th for all I care.
They're making a 40th one. Trust me. Let's do it, Star Wars.
I'm watching until I can't bear it.
I'm getting there. That's about my closing point of the movie. I'm getting there. This franchise is losing me. Listen, franchises lose people. Star Wars is a franchise. It's very special to me, to all of us. And it just sucks what's happening, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we could do without the racists and the Trump supporters.
All right. Easy. Basically, they use nostalgia too heavy-handedly in places and clearly miss some opportunities for the right amount of it. You know, R2-D2 was nice, but then he plays like Leia's message. I mean, that's very heavy-handed.
Carrie Fisher.
No, I teared up. I clapped too, if you remember. But, you know, I mean, if I was to summarize it, like the filmmakers feel like it'll always feel like fan fiction in a certain way, but they should feel like authors that should take ownership. They should invent. That Star Wars at the end of the day was about new worlds and invention and innovation, like what Lucas did. You know, don't show me another AT-AT, like show me something cool. The visuals I concede were good, but that's really about it. And in terms of plot and story, I will quote Yoda, Master Yoda, Page Turner this was not. So yeah, that's about it. Apart from that, it's been a while, man. You know, we need to maybe wrap this up, go eat some Kentucky Fried Pork.
Yeah. Do you want to actually go for another showing?
Yeah. You want to do that?
Let's do it, man. I'm so psyched. This podcast.
I'm still going to watch again. I'm not denying that.
Yeah. This recording just hyped me up more, man. I'm down to watch it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's face it. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I'm embracing it.
Yeah. All right. So as we head out, once again, let's go watch the movie, at least in the near future. Any last word to anybody who's stuck around through all of this?
Thanks. Jesus, what are you still doing here? Go.
You crazy nerds.
Eat food or something. Take a nap, man. Jeez.
But if you're still here, thank you. And if you liked it, I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on what we said. You have to let us know who you think won the feud. You can tweet at us. You can comment down below. And yeah, you can check out our other episodes. Anything else we need to let them know?
Check us out on Twitter, and we'll be putting up a vote there as well. So feel free to jump in and vote for who you think won.
This guy. Who has two thumbs and won the feud? This guy. All right. See you guys.
Bye-bye.